Good morning. Today's Thursday, March the 14th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County DA Stacy Eads. Good morning.
Good morning.
You brought something with very fine print.
Right. I am squinting to read it myself.
Oh, I thought you were showing off that you could and that I had no shot at it.
No showing off over here.
All right. You ready for your question?
So ready.
All right. I'm going to... Why do we say when two people share the cost of a date that they're going Dutch?
I have no clue.
Yeah, I know.
I think like one of another question. This just feels like potentially dangerous question to answer.
Fair enough.
So you tell me, Brian.
All right. War has influenced the slurs in our language more than anything else. For example, when a soldier runs from battle, the French say that he's gone traveling English style, while the English say that he's on a French leave. During the Anglo-Dutch War of the 17th century, British insults were that Dutch courage came from a bottle, while a Dutch treat meant that everybody paid their own way, which, of course, was no treat at all. So I guess it's kind of like a backhanded slap, huh? Well, that one wasn't too much fun. Oh, well.
Next time.
Yeah. So what's been keeping you busy? Or the office busy, I guess, is probably more appropriate.
Well, in addition to thinking about what the question will be when we start our show here, I was thinking about what has been keeping us busy, what's new and what's changing. So I think that there's a lot of the same, of course, busy with jury trials and calendars and meeting with victims, reaching out and trying to provide the services that we need to provide. Nothing terribly new and exciting, I would say. There's the tiny print here that I brought with me is an initiative measure that we're seeking many of the district attorneys across the state to provide for some amendments to Prop 47, some modifications that would allow some treatment to be provided, and also for folks that are struggling with drug addiction, substance abuse issues, but also some potential increased penalties for repeat offenders in the area of theft, as well as dealing in hard narcotics such as fentanyl. So that's an initiative that we're hoping to get on the ballot so the voters can take a position on what we're seeing as pretty significant issues in terms of our hands are somewhat tied in order to address these types of crimes and to allow there to be opportunity, additional opportunity for treatment. And if an offender is not so inclined and continues to engage in the criminal conduct, there may be options to stop that behavior.
So for those of us not in the legal arena, what was Prop 47?
So that was the proposition that modified a number of the penal code statutes that reduced a large part of it was to reduce incarceration. So it reduced a number of drug possession charges that in the past had been potentially chargeable as felony offenses. They're what we call wobblers. They could have been charged either as felonies or as misdemeanors. They also, there were also modifications. This was the change in the law that made it so that if an offender goes into an open retail store, even with the intent to go in there and steal items, that unless they stole items that exceeded $950, then they could only be charged in most situations, except for like the super strikes or sex offender registrant folks. They could only be charged as a misdemeanor level petty theft for the most part.
So it kind of legalized shoplifting. regular guy terminology.
Dramatically reduced our toolbox tools in terms of what we could do, in particular with the repeat offenders. So, you know, if we, in the past, we were able to charge those types of offenses as a second degree burglary, or there was the petty theft with a prior. So individuals that had previously been convicted with a petty theft and had served at least one day in jail, they potentially could have been served with a felony level offense. But that discretion and those options were taken away. And so, and then the other thing that's happened is that even for, you know, most serious narcotics dealers, drug traffickers, even if they're trafficking in fentanyl, which we're all very aware of the crisis that's associated with fentanyl within our community and the toll that that is taking on us all, that those individuals were no longer subject to, for the most part, with some very limited exceptions, to being sentenced to prison for these offenses. So they became those types of offenses that were eligible only for incarceration here at our local county jail, which really changed, you know, like the makeup of the jail. And it's part of the realignment, part of the prison population overpopulation, and you know, the state working to try to reduce the number of folks in state prison. A lot of it was well-intended, but it's had some really challenging negative impacts on our community. And I think that most folks that are out, you know, within the community have probably experienced, you know, I know I have, you know, the shoplifter filling the shopping cart and walking out the door with it without paying a penny.
Or slowing down as the alarm goes off. Well-intended? You think this 47 was well-intended?
You know, I think there's surely controversy in that statement.
It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Stacy Eads. Budget process is going on. There was a couple meetings I went to earlier this week, and they indicated that the various departments are sharpening pencils, if they can find one, grinding it, trying to make things happen. What is your sense coming out of the state budget, where your department will be for the upcoming year?
Well, my sense is certainly that we all need to tighten our belts. We're looking very closely, you know, at our budget. You know, for example, there are training opportunities where in a well-funded world, I would be sending more individuals, you know, to some out-of-state training, and particularly, you know, just the other day, looking at sending some folks to a training, you know, for our case management system that we use within the office, because there are a lot of potential things that the system can do for us, but we haven't necessarily been utilizing all of those. It's been phases and stages. And so to ensure that we're utilizing that case management system to its full potential, and also putting it into action for some of the upcoming implementation of, you know, other mandates that have come to us from the state. But, you know, but in reality, it's like, okay, well, we're going to, you know, send a smaller core team to do this training, and they can bring the information back to us. So, you know, that's just a small example of, you know, looking at ensuring that we're using the funds that we have in a very wise manner, which frankly we should be doing regardless. But, you know, at the same time, we were looking to, you know, send our entire child abuse services team for a multidisciplinary training in the state of Alabama, which interestingly is where there was kind of the origin of some of the best child advocacy centers. And so we were hopeful to send, you know, the full team. And there were some challenges, you know, coming from our grant funder regarding, you know, those team members that really caught us by surprise, things that historically would have been funded. So we're seeing tightening of the belt from kind of every source, which, you know, looking at the fact that we do have additional things that are being sent our way to do within the district attorney's office, and kind of that transition in terms of, you know, what it means to be a DA and be a deputy DA, and you know, looking at cases forward, looking at the present, and then also there's kind of this transition of kind of looking back at what has been done in the past, and with the resentencing motions and things along those lines. And so it's the kind of, you know, doing more with less.
But it sounds like less is different also, if the rules are changing a little bit.
Less is different. And it's, it, you know, it's not, I don't think it's, you know, dire straits. And I'm really grateful for the fact that I have an amazing business manager who, you know, watches our budget very closely. And she does a great job. She's an absolute expert in her area. And so she's very cognizant and, you know, protective of the funds that we have, and creative in how we reach out to other new potential sources. And likewise, I have a great management team in that full regard, and our investigators are really proactive as well in terms of reaching out to, you know, and looking for new resources that we might be able to utilize to keep the office running, and bring on some new types of functions, you know. So, you know, I've mentioned it before, but we have like the organized retail theft unit now, that's new within the office, where we're really dedicating services, and we have some assistance to do so, to address the retail theft crimes within the community. So I think that's I'm really happy about that, and that opportunity. Well, yes, to deal with some of those those consequences,
yes,
of Prop 47, which, again, we are hoping to get the signatures needed to get this initiative on the ballot to help fix some of those, you know, loopholes and issues that were a result of Prop 47.
So, do you guys have a grant writer on staff?
We do not have a
department.
No, we don't have a grant writer on staff. And that's one of the things that we have talked about in-house, that perhaps the county as a whole could really benefit by having a grant writing department, you know, and divisions that could reach out and help all of the departments in terms of seeking those funds. And there's a lot of time that is consumed in just looking for grants that might apply, that you might qualify for, that would allow us to do the work that we should be doing, and perhaps some new opportunities, things that are applicable. So there's just like locating those grants, and then doing the writing and application process. And then if you're awarded the grant, then the compliance measures, functional timesheets. There's a lot of work that goes into the grants and themselves, and all of it makes really good sense, but it is time consuming, and that's one of the areas I would love to see the county explore a little more deeply is having some resources to assist all the departments in the grant funding and compliance process.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with DA Stacy Eads. What makes a good ADA?
A good ADA? Is that
That's it? Not Americans with Disability Act, sorry.
So
Assistant
I'll
District
help.
Attorney.
Let me help you So within our office, and there's across the country different terminology that's utilized. So there's the structure within our office, in the organizational chart, if you will. There's the district attorney. Then there's an option to have a assistant district attorney, which would be, as it sounds, a direct assistance of the district attorney, who would have the same. In the absence of the district attorney kind of ability and
right,
authority, the official number two. And then within the structure of the Humboldt County DA's office, we have two senior deputy district attorneys who oversee deputy district attorneys. So the boots on the ground within our office really are the deputy district attorneys, with some oversight from team leaders as well as the senior deputy district attorneys. The assistant district attorney is not a filled slot within my office, and so that's kind of the overall structure in terms of with the attorneys. What makes a good deputy district attorney? Number one, integrity, ethics. Hardworking, dedicated public servant, someone who has a good, clear understanding of what's right and wrong, which sounds incredibly simple, but it really isn't. A lot of what we're seeing, perhaps.
Just all the boundaries of the law, I would think, would be challenging to even get a tertiary.
Yeah, so an ability to, comprehend the law, analyze the facts as they apply to the law, issue spotting, all of those are powerful strengths. But professionalism, integrity, compassion and understanding for those that we serve and the victims, the people that are directly impacted by the criminal conduct of others. And also, really having good judgment, what's fair, what's a good outcome here, and treating, and ensuring that everyone's rights are upheld, including the accused. So that's a very important aspect, so that the professionalism that's required to be a good deputy district attorney.
I'm not hearing dorsal fin.
No, that's not what it's about. We really are,
I mean, you hear about that, that somebody wants to be that aggressive and defend at all costs, things of that nature.
There shouldn't be any at all cost. That's not what should be happening. That's not justice. You know, it's not a matter of, you know, seeking a conviction without, you know, any regard for what's the right thing to do. You know, and there are occasions where we're, you know, making that, you know, you might hear some like, oh, well, you know, there's losses. But, and I think we talked about this before as well, that I really think that if we are bringing cases that we believe the crime has, you know, occurred and that we can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, and we bring that to the jury, and if, as long as the jury is given all the facts, the evidence, right, and they're given the law, they make the decision, you know, regarding whether an individual is guilty or not guilty, whether that burden has been met. And so I really do see that as our role, to ensure that they have that opportunity to do their job. So so it's not in my mind about, you know, getting, you know, a high number of convictions. And frankly, if you're doing the job right, there should be some, you know, that don't result in convictions, because it's those cases that are, you know, a little more challenging, or there's maybe some different interpretation, how those facts line up, different versions of events. Those are the cases that really oftentimes just need to be tried.
So in those scenarios, how does that play out internally when it comes back as a not guilty? Is there support that's there, or do you kind of go, well, okay, we weren't confident that was going to happen, so it's more confirmation than disappointment? How does that play out inside the department?
Well, you know, I would be remiss to think that, in particular, for a deputy district attorney that's putting on a case, he or she, you know, they're typically, they're invested in it, right? And so when you're in trial, it's a little bit of tunnel vision. You're focused on that, getting, you know, working with your witnesses, working with the victim, and you know, doing scheduling, you know, ensuring that the law is handling motions, picking a fair jury that's gonna, you know, hear the case. There are a lot of elements to putting on a trial. Dealing with media, you know, in terms of your presentation of your case. The computer stopped working, you know, all these little things, right? So you're putting a lot into it. And on top of, you know, the this is the right thing to do, and we do believe that, you know, there's sufficient evidence to prove the case, that the crimes have occurred. So to say that wouldn't feel, you know, disappointing to have not guilty verdicts, or, you know, to have a mistrial because of something that went wrong. And perhaps oftentimes those are things that go wrong that are far outside the control of the deputy district attorney or the district attorney's office. So of course that's, you know, you're going to feel that, right? But I really do work to convey to my staff, and I truly do believe that as long as they are putting the work into it and they are doing the motions and they're fighting the fight and they're presenting the evidence and they're doing so with integrity and professionalism, the decision that the jurors ultimately make is that's the jury's job, right? And so that's up to them. And we will try those cases where there's that potential that the outcome will be different from what we believe should be, you know, found by the jury. There are those types of cases. And so it's my hope that, though it might be tough at the beginning, that they will take the pride that they should in the work that they've done. And
you can only control so many things.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when you're a lot of the deputy district attorneys, of course, these are hardworking, intelligent, energetic, type A personalities, where you know, control and orchestrating is an important, you know, aspect of who they are. But yes, they don't have control over everything. So do what's right with that which you have control over. Make your arguments, make your presentation, do the best that you can, and accept that, you know, things might happen that aren't exactly how you planned.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 847. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads. So where does experience fit in with being a good either deputy or assistant DA if the profile is such, and I would imagine most smaller communities are the entry level, and you know, somebody's really doing well. They either move into the big boy marketplace, you're going to love this one, or they go private. Where does experience fit into this thing?
Well, I think experience fits into it throughout. So sure, we might, and we love to have folks that are, you know, fresh out of law school, that maybe they've done an internship at a district attorney's office or a public defender's office, or, you know, have some sort of familiarity, have been in the courtroom. Maybe they did a clinic within their law school that gave them opportunity to be in the courtroom or work with clients or victims. Maybe they did some work with restraining orders, things along those lines. So those are good, you know, practical experiences. But the reality is we could bring someone who has the motivation, the integrity, the ability to be the professional, the capacity to learn the law, and we could take them and give them the training and the hands-on experience, you know, to be a very good deputy district attorney, productive, a good representative of the people. And the reality is, in particular with the smaller counties, that sometimes folks that come, they do come for that experience, on the job experience. They might have the opportunity to handle a trial much earlier than they would at a larger office. They might have the opportunity to handle a preliminary hearing on a felony case much earlier than they would have that opportunity, say, at a larger office. So these are really great experiences that can build the skills for a trial attorney, and that may serve them well if they want to transition, you know, into the a civil practice or a private practice, as you mentioned, or if they want to, you know, return to a more urban setting, or they might fall in love with Humboldt County and put some roots down and you know, learn to appreciate the beauty of our community and the people we serve. So, you know, that would be great,
just in
too.
In case there happens to be somebody out there, let's go.
If you're listening.
Yeah, exactly.
We have openings. But, but then, of course, you know, experience as, and I have a number of deputy DAs who have been in the office for many years at this point, and they've been working on building, you know, their, the experience that they have under their belts. And, you know, there's always something new. That's one of the great things about the profession. The law does change, and that's interesting, and it can become, you know, it's challenging. How can we get where we need to go working with these new laws? How can we, you know, serve the community? How can we ensure that there's, you know, justice here? So, you know, and then also the people that we meet and interact with and serve, you know, directly, that's interesting, and, you know, has a lot of opportunity for great rewards. And as the deputy DAs get more and more experience, and they're able to handle more and more types of cases and handle issues and learn to appreciate the fact that, you know, we will be able to work through these things and rely upon each other. And that's another great thing that I see within the office is the teamwork and the camaraderie, and, you know, deputy district attorneys, they don't let their egos get in the way. They ask each other, hey, I have this issue or I have this challenge. You know, have you seen this? You know, what are your thoughts? What do you think about presenting, you know, this bit of evidence at you know, early stage in the trial, or would this fit in better? And just to see that is great. It's really rewarding. They're working hard to serve Humboldt County.
Where does textbook knowledge fit in?
Well, you know, I really do feel, you know, when you go through law school, you, of course, you learn law. You know, that's part of it. But you also really are learning how to learn law. And you learn to think like a lawyer. So you learn how to, you know, spot issues, what's the legal rule, you analyze it, and you come to a conclusion. There aren't that many absolutes under the law, and the law is always going to be changing. So we have to be able to adapt within our profession. And so we're always learning, you know, thanks to ongoing changes. But, you know, you also get, you know, there are some consistent themes and policies and things that, you know, kind of are norms within society and what's, you know, what's valued within a society. And so those things, you know, sometimes feel like they get chipped away and then they're rebuilt. So, of course, there's some modification to that. But there are some big ones that I think generally, you know, most of us, you know, agree on.
So getting back to the training that may or may not be possible. In person, book, webinars?
Oh, we have all kinds of opportunities. So we have a lot of, you know, book resources, and a lot of what we do in terms of like our legal research is certainly online. So and then also we do in person. I do think that in-person training has a great value that just can't be replaced. And we have webinars. So all of the above.
Yeah, okay. You probably did well with multiple choice then. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
See you everybody tomorrow.